Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of Monkey Tennis is brought to you in association with White City Water Installations. Whether you're looking for a beautiful fountain befitting a top international hotel, or a jacuzzi big enough to hold at least five men, we're the ones to call. We are the industry leaders when it comes to the installation of stunning water features, having worked with eminent clients such as the BBC and Pear Tree Productions since 1992. If you want to spend lots of money on expensive items, White City Water Installations are here to help. Our fountains are designed to make a loud dripping noise whilst also clearly representing a fountain of knowledge. Our famous jacuzzis were the first to ever be seen on a UK chat show and feel as refreshing as a tropical fruit drink. Contact us for a quote today.
Monkey Tennis? You better believe it, babe. There's a new chat in town. Monkey Tennis?
Ice white shoes, ice white socks with navy blue double cadet top.
Aha! Monkey Tennis?
I've just been told that Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout.
Monkey Tennis?
Oh, what the heck? Rock and roll, it's Oliver Parr!
Monkey Tennis?
Yes, I am in a jacuzzi sipping spunt.
Alan.
And on that bombshell.
Monkey Tennis?
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. We are going to be tackling Knowing Me, Knowing You, the TV series, starting today with episode one. So I'm Adam Brooks, Knowing Me, Adam Brooks, Knowing You, Tom Dark, aha.
Aha.
Knowing Me, Adam Brooks, Knowing You, Nicolda, aha.
Aha.
Knowing Me, Adam Brooks, Knowing You, Tom Stab, aha.
Aha.
I feel like that's an excessive mention of my own name.
It's what you've always wanted, though.
Are we going to do that in every episode?
Probably not, no.
Well, basically, Adam is the Alan Partridge of this podcast now, that's it.
So some background notes. This was first broadcast on the 16th of September, 1994. I also found out that in Finland, it's called Kokuna Tukiola Show, which...
Wow.
Yeah. How did you find that out?
IMDb.
Thanks, trivia section.
The literal,
did you know?
The literal translation of that is the Rule the Roost Show, which is a bit weird. Also, speaking of IMDb, the description of this show is very lacking. They basically say it's a mock of a TV show. Already not a correct sentence, is it? It's a mock of a TV show where the host is rude to many of his guests.
Well, that bit's accurate.
Yeah, but if someone sold the show to me on that basis, I would not watch it. Did you?
Yeah, true.
The okay. Commissioner Bell is not wrong.
So Alan's been given his own show.
How though? Because if you have listened to our previous episodes of On the Hour and the Day Today, he's not exactly a consummate professional.
How's he got
that's
here?
That's a very
How's
good
that
point.
Commission happened?
Who commissioned this? Do they cover that in iPartridge? How he actually got this TV commission?
I don't know.
Oh. Adam, I thought you were a resident.
Oh, yes. No, actually.
Who does know?
He's got it. Well, yes, I do, but it also throws up a bit of an inconsistency. I can tell you how... I can't tell you how it got commissioned for radio, but I can tell you how it made the jump to TV.
Right.
Oh, just to be clear, we're going to be talking about the TV series here rather than the radio series. You can research that in your own time.
Well, I mean, we thought it's easier to go back and watch a TV show because it's available online, it's on DVD. The radio shows, I'm not actually sure if they're commercially available anywhere at the moment.
Just YouTube. I know I gave a courtesy listen on YouTube.
And also, I think it's a lot of the kind of the character ideas are kind of repeated in the TV show as well. They might slightly change the character, but you do get some repetition of stuff. So yeah, we've gone TV because it felt like the bigger thing to go with.
So between the radio version and the TV version, according to iPartridge, he cornered Tony Hares and said, "Are you going to put this baby on the Gogglebox or what?" which confused me a bit because I thought in a latter episode of this series, in the Christmas special, Tony Hares is introduced as a new commissioning editor, isn't he?
But yes, he
but
is.
According to iPartridge, he commissioned this for TV
inconsistent.
In the first place.
Uncovered.
Another comms bomb.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the thing, I guess, with iPartridge is he is painting a very false picture of the Partridge reality.
That's true.
It's a very sort of jaded,
very
one-sided...
Good point. Yeah.
He's an unreliable narrator,
so,
isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I feel like the truth is not necessarily being put down on
He's playing with the truth
somewhat. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, just a quick note about the theme tune. According to the book, it's re-recorded by the Jeff Lovell Orchestra, for radio at least, because ABBA demanded a royalty. And Alan was not prepared to pay it.
Do you want some Know Me, Knowing You facts, the song?
Yes.
Yes, let's do it.
Released in February 1977, reached number one in the UK chart.
You must remember that fondly, Tom.
yep, very good.
And currently has 12.8 million plays on Spotify. That's all I've got.
That's pretty huge.
What are the Apple Music figures?
Null and void.
Oh,
I don't know.
Let's talk a little bit about the opening credits.
Oh, please.
Amazing.
Please. Yeah. That chair that kind of flies in reminds me of the chair that you had once.
Yes. Lovely leather chair. A red version of that.
I did, yeah. It was,
which you still got, I'm pretty
lovingly
sure.
Lovingly donated by my granddad, God rest his soul. But unfortunately, no, it sustained a horrifying crack and... after trying to salvage it, we had to put it out for the binman.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Sad times.
God, I love that chair.
Sorry, you go.
I was just going to say, they're clearly trying to make the chair and couch happen, aren't they, in the opening credits? They're trying to make it iconic, like the Mastermind chair.
Yeah.
And it's never going to work because it's a really ugly chair. And like, it's a bit presumptuous to put that in the credits of the first show. Like, nobody gives a shit about that chair.
Why
at this
is it
point.
Also flying through space?
Why not? That's what
I don't understand. Why is it going through space?
My favourite bit is his face on the keyboard that goes massive. Yes.
Yeah. I also love his face on the microphone that flies towards the screen as well.
A nice call back to some of the transitions in the day to day where you see him.
Yeah, really face, naff graphics.
Yeah, his face imprinted onto
that then runs away.
Yeah.
Love that, don't you?
Does anybody want to hazard a guess at how many times Alan's face appears during the credit sequence?
Five.
Nick's saying
six.
Five.
All right.
Tom Dark's saying six.
I'll go four then.
And Tom Stubbs going four. Bearing in mind, I imagine Alan himself has probably had a pretty heavy hand in how prominent.
Okay, 27.
His face appears 18 times.
Wow.
We were way
brilliant.
Off.
Wow.
Brilliant. There's also apparently a little sort of a little thing for the keen-eyed to look out for in the opening credits. Over the course of this series, the size of his name in proportion to Knowing Me, Knowing You grows with every episode.
I did not know that.
In the actual credit sequence itself?
I believe, or maybe it's behind him in the studio.
Yeah,
it's behind him in the studio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because in the commentary, Iannucci basically says that in Alan's head, he's hoping that people start calling it the Alan Partridge Show. Yeah. So he just wants the Alan Partridge
Alan Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also noted in the opening credits that in a real chat show of this kind, the guests would probably appear in the opening credits. If you look at, you know, Jonathan Ross or Graham Norton, you see little clips of people who've been on the show. Not here, just Alan. 18 Alans.
It's all about Alan, yeah.
As he enters, obviously he does a trademark aha.
Yeah, and I would say the opening kind of few moments of the show kind of go quite well. The chat is quite funny. He describes it as a JFK kind of night. I'm not sure what he means by that, though. Is that a good thing or a bad
thing? You'll remember where you were when you saw it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, right.
Yeah. Like you'll remember
really
where
you were.
Like the recall
like,
there was...
Like you'll remember where you were when JFK was shot and killed. He also obviously gets out his fake chat guns. There's a different weapon in every episode.
Yep.
But yeah, does remember to holster them again. Even fictitious guns need to be safe.
I feel like Alan's very good when it comes to his mime, whether it's a mimed gun battle, whether it's miming playing bass guitar. He really believes in those moments.
Yep. Nick, as you mentioned, he said, I like to think people in 30 years will remember what they were doing when I first said aha. It was on the 16th of September 1994. Can you remember what you were doing?
Ooh. It was either, I think it was at school. I think I was just working hard at school.
Well done.
So hard.
Yeah, just assume double maths.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did make a note that it's much with Alan Partridge, how the intros are always the same. You do have the thing where, yeah, you've got some kind of mimed weaponry type entrance. Always some kind of pun on the word chat, followed by a really awkward chat with Glenn Ponder.
Yep.
So, Nick, I mean, you say you feel like it starts quite well. I think it quite quickly descends when he starts chatting with Glenn. They start talking over each other. It just goes really awkward very quickly, and that's the first sign that maybe this chat show isn't going to go quite so smoothly.
Yep. He also pronounces it mezzanine, which is not acceptable.
And the set is modelled on the lobby of a top international hotel.
Tom, I have a question. As someone who has spent a bit of time in and around the recording of TV chat shows, can you give us an insight into how much of rehearsal would have gone into this? What would their day have been like in the lead up to the recording?
Sure. I could
You've gone straight for an expert as well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you've got an expert in the room here, guys, so that's fine. Well, with any chat show, you'll have a rehearsal in the day. He stops falling asleep already. I mean, you asked me the question, pal. You'd have a run through of the whole show.
Yeah.
So not with the guests, but in terms of all the intros and outros for the guests and any bits between, the host would.
So Glenn and Alan would have prepped for this.
In theory, yes. Yeah. But in reality, no.
Yeah. I have another question. Do you, obviously this is broadcast as live, allegedly. Do any shows still broadcast absolutely live now, or is everything subject to a short delay?
Well, no.
Jonathan Ross isn't live. It's done like
recordings.
Yeah. But I mean, things like X Factor and stuff. Do you know? Does it go out?
X Factor's live. Yeah.
But like literally live straight away, or is there like a 5-second delay?
I think everything has a slight few-second delay.
In case Dermot does a swear. Because didn't they introduce it after Sean Ryder swore on TFI Friday, or maybe? I can't remember.
Well, Sean Ryder got banned from Channel 4 for life after that happened.
They had him back, though, when they got TFI Friday back. The same series that Alan guest hosted.
Exactly. Yeah. I was there. It was great.
At this point, he's claiming that Roger Moore is coming. And at this point... I think when I first watched it, I did believe that was real. That was likely to see Roger Moore.
What do we think the reality of this situation is, though? Because he's apparently speeding to the studio in a lovely Vauxhall Carlton, but is he actually coming to the studio? Like,
well, I mean, we know the answer.
Yeah, but what's actually happened
in Alan's world or in the real world?
Either.
I don't
understand your question.
In Alan's world, Roger Moore is basically on his way, but seems to be in no hurry to actually make it onto the chat show.
I guess I'm saying, is he a booked guest? If so, why hasn't he turned up?
Oh yeah, he's a booked guest, but I think he's got a busy schedule.
He's just not bothered.
Yeah. And Alan and team as relative,
they're putting a brave
amateurs,
face on things, basically.
Haven't left enough of a time.
So
buffer.
It's fair to say that this one isn't 100% Alan's fault. Just production staff have got things wrong.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, I don't think he's not responsible for this. It's bad traffic. He's, you know.
Yeah.
It's traffic on the Chiswick roundabout. Yeah. That's the problem.
But some things are going better. For example, for the first time ever on a chat show, he's got a beautiful fountain. And I'll talk about it a bit in later episodes, but for the first time ever on a chat show, it tends to be a water feature, which suggests that they basically have just plumbed a hose through the studio and are using it each week to bring you a world first, whether it's a fountain or a jacuzzi or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Before we go any further, do you want? Has anyone got any Glenn Ponder facts about the person who plays him and stuff like that?
Yeah, I got a few bits and pieces.
So
Steve Brown
is the well, quote unquote actor, but he's actually a genuine composer. He's worked with Coogan for years, so he did themes to I'm Alan Partridge. He worked on the Tony Farino Phenomenon special, and there was an album as well that I'm not aware of, and he did the theme to TV Burp as well.
Yep, and he produced and performed on Harry Hill's film. He was a producer on the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
Wow.
And he was nominated for an Olivier Award.
Mm.
Yeah.
Big facts.
Yeah, he's a big deal.
In fact, he did a lot of Coogan stuff, didn't he? Steve Coogan Live, Paul and Pauline Calf's Cheese and Ham Sandwich, Steve Coogan the Man Who Thinks He's It, the Tony Farino Phenomenon, and Steve Coogan Live in Lewd, which I think was one of his very early stand-ups.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's flanked by Chalet this week. The band name changes every week. There's no insight anywhere as to why that... I think that's the point, isn't it?
That, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like that's kind of... It's an easy gag because it is ridiculous. It's always a ridiculous name, and it makes no sense.
If I was to hazard a guess at why, though, if I had to pin it down, I would say it's something to do with if you've got a regular band there for six episodes, you have to pay them more.
I think it's a PRS get out.
Exactly. I think he's getting off paying them properly on a technicality. There is a band in real life called Chalet on Spotify. They have 21 monthly listeners, and their most popular song has under 1,000 plays. They released an album called Tucson in 2013, and it's actually pretty good. Listen to it. I recommend you check them out. We'll probably put a link on the socials.
See if we can double their monthly listening figures.
There was another band called The Chalets, who were an Irish five-piece between 2001 and 2008, and had singers including Roni and Pee-Pee. Chalet facts for you there. Also, just a bit of Alan and Glenn origins. When Alan met Glenn, he was a band conductor, but was also responsible for collecting the coins that were thrown at the band.
What coins that are thrown at a band? Is that a thing?
I think it is if the band's terrible.
Joke is that the band weren't good.
That's the joke.
There's several references to him basically saving Glenn Ponder from like wine bar obscurities.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the set design.
I think I've got this note as well.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's kind of awful, but I guess it's also, this is what, 1994, so it's very in keeping with mid-90s. It's pastel colours. As you say, the chair and the table, they're awful. But also, I for me, looking at just like the way it's lit, the type of music, the outfits Alan has, his haircut, the way he introduces guests, it seems like it's all really based on Wogan, basically. So
yeah.
And the fact that he even references it being filmed at BBC TV Centre in Shepherd's Bush. So Wogan was the main BBC One chat show from 82 to 92. And if you go back and look at clips of that on YouTube, I feel for me that must have been a major, major inspiration behind how they want the whole aesthetic of this show to look, and a big inspiration behind the Alan character as
well. So are we to assume that Partridge has taken over from Wogan as the prime time chat show host?
Yeah, that's kind of, that would kind of fit,
So are we to assume that this is BBC One Saturday night, 10 PM or 10:30 PM or whatever? Is this what we're assuming?
Well, in real life?
Well, if this, in the Alan world.
I think he would definitely sell it as he was the new Wogan. Yeah.
No, but I mean, is this going out as prime time?
I don't think it's going out at prime time. And I think the main bit of evidence for that is that it is down the line, you see what he's replaced with. And I don't think what he's replaced with is a show that would go out to a prime time audience.
And actually, even in the Alan world, it's a BBC Two show, not a BBC One show.
Yeah.
But that's very Alan, isn't it? It's like he thinks he's finally made it. He's got his own chat show, but it's on BBC Two, not BBC One.
So you reckon it's
probably on at 10:30, not 9 or something like that. Yeah.
I've also been vindicated in terms of viewing figures. So I think we talked in a previous episode about how many viewing figures we thought this would have. And I said I thought it was easily north of 8 or 9 million and was lambasted. in a later episode, they say that it's been losing 1 million viewers an episode. So that means it must have started with at least 7.
Yeah.
Good point.
Because you would think that in that sort of slot, a chat show would be sort of what the schedule would be kind of built around. It would be like, that would be the highlight of
You are talking about fictional viewing figures here anyway, of course.
That's very true. Real.
Really love to know what the actual viewing figures for this were back in 94, but I couldn't find that anywhere, unfortunately.
It predates the internet. That's the problem with Naomi. Harder to just look stuff up on IMDb and present it as if we've done some work.
If anyone involved wants to let us know those numbers, then please do get in touch.
Another note on the set design is that it's just been badly designed as well. For example, Glenn Ponder's mezzanine is way too high.
It's so high.
To the point that Alan's craning his neck now, and in a later episode has to basically get a sort of a literal crane.
I'll save it. Again, that's perfect Partridge, isn't it? He's trying to kind of overreach, basically. So he wants everything to be bigger, better, taller, whatever, and it just doesn't really work in terms of how a real show would.
Because Glenn has to sort of peer over and sort of try and speak to it just doesn't work.
Glenn's like putting his back out trying to sort of conduct the drum cues and talk at the same time.
And I think Steve Brown actually said it was genuinely a nightmare to perform the music up there because they were so high. Just like the audio was awful, so it was really hard to get a sense of how the orchestra was sounding.
Is it a staple of like older chat shows of yesteryear in America and things to have a band kind of on a platform like that?
I think it's quite an American thing. Like Letterman used to have a house band, didn't he?
And, but like specifically on a platform above the action.
Doesn't Jonathan Ross have one though?
No.
He used to have four puffs and a piano.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was a long time ago.
Yeah. I'm talking mainly about like having them up on this kind of on this mezzanine.
I don't know about a platform.
The only other show I can think of is the Friday Night Project that did that, that revived that.
With Justin Lee Collins.
Yeah. Bad times. Yeah. It's just a weird thing. It's a bit of a chat show anomaly.
Shall we move on to the first guest of the series?
Harking back to Alan's sports presenter past.
So we've got Sue Lewis, world champion show jumper, played by the incredible Rebecca Front.
Lady show jumping horse legend, I think. Okay.
Oh, well, not my words.
Yeah. Rebecca Front, obviously, we've talked about before. She is an incredible human being, a wonderful actress, and basically everything she's ever been in has been good.
All right, Adam, chill out.
Yeah, you want to marry her?
She is. I would genuinely be more starstruck meeting her than probably anybody in Hollywood.
Rebecca, file your court injunction now, yeah. I think.
Can I run through some of the brilliant programs she's been in just quickly?
Yes.
War and Peace, excellent. Humans, generally good. Psycho Bitches, The Wrong Mans, Death Comes to Pemberley, The Thick of It, Grandma's House, which is underrated. I love Grandma's House. Nighty Night, Big Train, People Like Us, Fist of Fun, Absolutely Fabulous, and The Smell of Reeves and Mortimer.
Yeah, that she knows how to choose a good comedy, that's
yep.
for sure.
Yep.
She did say as well, so the Sue Lewis character was her favourite character to play in Naomi Knowing You as well.
Nice. So obviously the format of this is that there's a revolving cast of actors in real life I'm talking about now who play different characters in each show.
Yeah, so you've got Rebecca Front, Patrick Marber, Dean McCain, David Schneider. They normally all feature in an episode in some way.
Yeah, and I used to play a sort of fun game where as he's describing his next guest, I would try and guess which of them was going to be the person playing it.
Okay, so that's an interesting question. So we're talking, this was what, September 94. Did everybody watch this originally when it aired?
No.
I think I saw it on a repeat run, so maybe like a few years later.
Like maybe 95 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. It was before I'd seen I, Man and Partridge, though, so it was pre-97, yeah. I guess.
Because we talked about the day-to-day, and it seemed like possibly I was the only one that watched the day-to-day when that was aired.
All of this I came to many years later on DVD.
I did I, Man and Partridge, and then went back.
Nick, did you not watch the day-to-day at university?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Many years later at university on DVD, but not in the 90s, so when this was being broadcast or, you know, repeated, I didn't see it.
Yeah, okay. Because, I mean, I remember watching this in the 90s. And again, that thing where just being, because I was only 12 and being slightly unsure to begin with, is this going to be a real chat show or not? And it's only when you start seeing the guests, you're like, oh, okay, it's that.
It took me a good 20 minutes, I think, when I first saw it, to be absolutely sure.
When the horse did a poo.
Because I knew that Alan was a character, but I thought they might be doing a chat show where Alan's in character interviewing real people, which would actually be
but
quite
it's kind
good.
Of, they are talking, there was some talk about that potentially happening in the future.
Right, because I mean, he's done TFI Friday in character, he's been on Jonathan Ross and I think Graham Norton in character as well.
Promoting the book.
Yeah.
I guess the issue is how well you can improvise that character, because obviously it's very well written, so to be able to do it on the hoof and respond to real people is tricky.
I think it's hard.
Well, I think they did, even doing this show, I think there was quite a large improvisational element to it, because Coogan writes in his autobiography about he had a clipboard, so he had kind of bullet points of where to take the script, but it wasn't strictly scripted, and he also had an earpiece to Armando Iannucci. So sometimes Armando would give him directions or be like, say this or whatever. So it was slightly improvised for the Knowing Me, Knowing You episode.
And in terms of framing as well, they'd say there's an example with the when the horse poos later on, he says like move a little bit to the left in the earpiece.
Yeah.
So you see him shift so to get the poo in the background.
Yeah, yeah. And actually that's something he writes about specifically in the autobiography, that Armando gave him stage directions for that, and because it was behind him, he couldn't even see it. He didn't know it happened.
So that was a complete coincidence.
Yeah, that was...
Because the timing of it's perfect.
Yeah, you would think that they engineered that, but that was genuine.
That is a perfect bit of a...
In the commentary, Rebecca Front says one of the questions she gets asked most about Alan Partridge is, how did they get the horse to crap on cue?
Yeah, so that was what I originally put in my notes. I wonder how difficult it was to orchestrate that happening, and it turns out it was just a genuine moment.
Yep.
TV gold.
Anyway, more horse chat later in the show. So, yeah, the first guest already a potential disaster, or a quiet disaster.
But again, I think with this one, it's not 100% Alan's fault, because to be fair to him, the guest is quite poor.
Yeah.
She's not speaking up. She hasn't really got much to say.
She can't, she can't even say aha correctly either.
No. He's not got much to work with here. So
her first answer to his question is, I don't know.
Yeah, so. It's a bit of a recurring theme, isn't it? Is that Alan is terrible, but all elements of the show are terrible. The set's been badly designed. The guests are poor bookings. The concepts haven't been thought through. All that's, you know, like the horse jump bit that's coming up.
Yeah, I think he asks her to speak up about four times in the first 20 seconds that they're speaking to each other.
I also like, sorry, that the unique fountain is already really off-putting. The sound is, so basically, he turns the fountain off within a few minutes of introducing it, saying, but then reminds you that it was there to represent the fountain of knowledge and it's been switched off.
There will be no knowledge. Yeah,
I had this vision whilst watching this, just thinking there must be someone from the commissioning department like on the side of the stage watching this unfurl and just thinking, this is an absolute disaster.
I've got five more episodes of this shit to do.
What have I done?
This is awful.
Oh yeah, and then obviously he sort of accidentally points to all the kind of the tricks of the chat show trade by going, you know, you've got an anecdote, do it now. Obviously, it's supposed to be natural, but
again, though, I think he's trying to help her. He's feeding her information and trying to sort of, you know, give her something to
work
with.
He's doing his best, isn't he?
He is doing his best.
Hawaii, exotic location, give me spice.
Actually, another thing I got from the commentary was that in the original script, it had Sue Lewis, Rebecca Front's character, talking a lot more. And it was actually Front's idea that the character would be would speak less, and that the first guest on Alan's show should be completely rubbish. So that was actually her idea.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, she is credited as a co-writer on this episode, so that'll
probably she's after that writing credit.
whilst Sue is trying to kind of deliver this anecdote, which is essentially a horse needed a bit of a drink.
anecdote.
Just as she's slowly getting there with the information, Alan does have to cut her off and give a Roger Moore update. And that kind of peppers the whole show, that whenever anything's kind of happening, Alan will interrupt everything and give her an update on where Roger Moore currently is.
So at this point, Roger is at Heston Services, which is approximately 11 miles and 34 minutes BBC Television Centre.
Okay.
Do we think he's requested a stop for maybe some strawberry Nesquik?
He tries to bring on the horse, obviously, and gets her to do the jump, but she can't because it will break the horse's legs. The horse is up Alan's sleeve, and a new regular section of the show. The lengths he goes to reference ABBA in every introduction is astounding, isn't it? It's so tenuous. Brilliant. Sue Lewis at the end of this interview mouths, "Sorry about that," to Alan.
Oh, I missed that.
Did you all make a note? How does Alan suggest they get the horse to do the jump?
By attaching sponges to its hooves.
He says, "Can we gaffer tape some sponges to the horse's legs?" I don't think that would work.
Oh dear. Are we on to the next guest?
I think
Keith Hunt, the presenter of the Looney Breakfast Show on Radio Leeds, and now the new presenter of This Is Your Life,
Played by Patrick Marber.
Yeah, and loosely based apparently on Chris Evans at the time.
Ah, that makes sense. I think actually this will be an interesting thing as we go through this series, if we can try and identify, because I feel like most of the chat guests are loosely based on real celebrities. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's quite easy to identify. Sometimes I think it's a bit of a mix of people.
Are you right? You're not wrong.
There he is. Even practice that. No, amazing.
Important to note that the horse turds are still very much throughout most of this interview.
That is the first thing in my notes about that. Just Patrick Marber, actually, it's probably worth discussing briefly. So Marber was pretty much the driving force behind Alan becoming this standout character. So after the On the Hour series, it was Marber that suggested to Iannucci and Coogan that develop Alan into a spin-off chat show, which they did with Radio 4 first, and because it went so well, they decided to take it to TV, and then at the same time they developed The Day to Day and Know Me Knowing You. So as we talked about in the previous episode, they decided to introduce Alan through The Day to Day to then lead on to this. And reading Coogan's autobiography again, he has a lot of kind words to say about Marber being a real mentor for him when he started out in comedy, working on things like The Day to Day.
He's sort of the unsung hero of Partridge, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think part of that may be, it seemed, and again, in Coogan's book, he doesn't really go into why, but him and Marber just kind of drifted apart. Mm. Well, and whereas he says that him, Coogan and Iannucci, even though they've been working closely together for years, he had a closer bond with Marber. Mm. So it's quite interesting how, as you get into the I'm Alan Partridge years, it's very much a Coogan, Iannucci and Peter Bainham type vehicle, and Marber's kind of not involved by that point.
I think it's possibly because I'm making
massive assumptions.
Yeah, but I think just Marber went in a completely different direction, didn't he? He's
a playwright now.
He wanted to move away from acting and perhaps go into writing a bit more and become a playwright. And I think that's such a shame because he's probably my favourite actor in this series. He's so good in every episode.
Yeah. I did note as well that most of the characters he plays are kind of smarmy shits as well.
Yeah.
He's very good at doing a character type like
being
that.
Being sort of self-satisfied.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it's illustrated quite nicely here because there's a lot of false humility in this bit where basically Alan sort of says, I've got a copy of the local paper with the story about how you...
Oh, don't embarrass me.
Yeah, exactly. But then thanks him later for bringing the cutting in himself.
Brilliant. Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout at this point as well.
Yep.
I've also got some details on that. Chiswick Roundabout is approximately 4.3 miles from Old Television Centre.
So he's made very good time.
He's approximately 19 minutes away at this point.
What this implies to me is that...
he's just going to miss it.
Yeah. Yeah. is that he could easily have made it, but he, in the end, chooses to go to the hotel instead of to the show.
Yeah.
You can imagine him in the car going, it's probably not worth it now.
Yeah.
Alan's got something else up his sleeve. It's Keith's son Sam, who he's not allowed to speak to directly.
He looks terrified when he comes out.
Because his marriage, as Alan described it, was dissolved.
Yeah.
It's an odd term to use.
Like some kind of business.
Yeah. And it then turns out that he's also forgotten his own son's birthday.
Can I ask a question? Who is the biggest arsehole here? Partridge for surprising Keith with the son, or Keith Hunt forgetting that it's his son's birthday? What is the worst of the two things there?
Alan's humiliating. Yeah, I think it's got to be Alan.
He's foisted it on him on national television.
Yeah.
I think he couldn't prep for it, and it's live.
Does Alan do that deliberately because he doesn't like Hunt?
Yeah, so I was just about to ask that. I can't remember. Is there anything in the show that sort of preempts this and they don't like each other
towards each other? Because Hunt says to Partridge, when they're talking about this is your life, he says, we couldn't have you on the show, we only have celebrities. They clearly don't like each other.
There could be a pre-existing dislike because they were both in similar positions.
Yeah. Both in local radio.
He was doing the breakfast show in Leeds. Yeah, exactly. And they've both graduated to new shows, but arguably Keith Hunt's is the much bigger prospect.
Because he kind of interacts with the crowd and they kind of call his catchphrase back, whereas I feel like Alan's is a much more kind of like, maybe there's an illuminated sign to prompt people to kind of call back to him, but I feel like Keith has a much more natural kind of engagement with the crowd.
I'm thinking Alan is jealous of Keith's success.
So you think the up Alan's sleeve is a deliberate premeditated setup?
The child he's got up his sleeve is basically to humiliate
him. It's an up yours to Hunt.
Yeah. It makes sense because he's also, as we find out, colluded with the kid's mum to get them the expenses paid.
I think Hunt's worse
here. But Keith cannot go.
I think Hunt's worse here because he's forgotten his own child's birthday.
We're not excusing him, but I think the putting him on national TV is probably the
Alan's bought him a trip to Disneyland.
Keith can't go.
Yeah, but that's Alan still bought him a holiday. That's fine.
I love
a tie and blazer badge combination pack.
First appearance. I love that he remembers Denise and Fernando's birthday, and then it says even horses get presents. And then talks about Sam. He's six. Am I right? I'm not wrong.
Absolutely owns him.
Yep.
He's done him. He's his enemy for the remainder.
To be fair though, Keith does sort of desperately fumble in his pockets and finds £10. He says, "Can you give him this?"
That's true. Fernando's at Cambridge as well. We find out. I think he was 22 in I, Man and Partridge Series 1, so he's in his first year at Cambridge, probably. Fernando Watch continues throughout the series.
Yeah,
Fernando Origins.
Yep.
Finally, Alan notices the steaming pile of horse mess behind him. It says live on air. Could someone clean that shit away, please? Oh, and it's time for his musical guest, one of my favourites.
Oh, yes. Shona McGough.
Performing Monday Morning, which Alan's obviously only heard the first 20 seconds of.
That'll do.
Yeah, that's classic Alan. Yeah. He has he listened to the first 20 seconds? Yeah. Has he listened to it at all?
Probably not. Played by Dean McKinnon, we will be mangling your surname for the rest of the series, Dean. Very sorry.
Did we decide on McCain?
I think so.
It's not McCain.
I'm sure I've heard that's how it's pronounced.
We'll look it up before the next episode. Yeah, you can see how she got booked, can't you?
Although he does desperately apologise to everyone after it's finished.
And her band are a dead giveaway. I mean, she's the one that's lit most brightly, but you can tell it's not...
You know where it's going as soon as they start.
And I love that he walks on at the end of the show, basically he follows it by just going, no, 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 no.
I love this. During the performance, they keep cutting away to Alan. Yeah. So in the kind of twee beginning part of the song, he's not along, he's loving it, and when it starts going punk, he looks absolutely horrified.
I'm not so much punk, I was more thinking it went a bit Heavy Maiden.
Heavy Maiden, yeah.
Very Heavy Maiden.
Would you buy this song?
Oh, I would, yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah, no, I think it's quite good.
It's all right for the time, isn't it?
Yeah. Did anybody else note on the last line of the song when Dune's kind of on the floor,
yes,
and the line is, suck on this, she doesn't even mime that line.
No, she's
like,
not
she's
saying
nowhere
it.
Near the microphone, which, like, why not just reshoot that?
I did also notice that the drummer in the band is a woman. Quick quiz question. Can you name any other female drummers in bands?
Yeah, there's one in Savages.
All right, not you then. Tom, one more.
Block Party?
Yeah, I was going to say Block Party, the new drummer's a girl.
All right, well, that backfired.
New Young Pony Club? Yep.
Don't know.
There's loads. I only had the cause.
Sleater Kinney?
Yeah,
okay, what we've learned is there's quite a lot of female drummers.
I think La Tigra.
Yeah, but that was good, Nick. That was really good.
Good observation.
Keep going. I'm really trying.
Roger
the
Moore.
The Cause. I said The Cause.
All right.
Yeah, that's the one thing he had. Roger Moore's still at Chiswick Roundabout at this point as well.
That is a serious traffic jam.
We're backed up for miles here, Alan. It's not looking good.
So you start to think he's not coming.
No, I think. Do you think that's the point where basically whoever is updating Alan on Roger's whereabouts has started to lie? Because he says what, he was there 5 minutes ago.
That's kind of a classic TV thing with like dealing with talent when it's like they'll be ready in 5 minutes. They'll be ready in 5 minutes. Before you know, like 5 minutes.
He says, "Yes, I've just been told Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout." Then he says, "What's he still doing there? He shouldn't be there."
That's the point where the real timeline and Roger and the timeline Alan's getting diverged, don't they? the song obviously is mainly about killing troublesome men in your life,
or just
general men, the postman, etc. The gas man gets blown away, I think.
Yep, he deserved it, I'm sure.
So Alan's at pains then to remind the viewers that murder is illegal. There's a great line. Does anyone have it? I don't think I've got it.
He says, "Let me announce this now. If any young people are watching, let me say this. Whilst it may be all well and good for rock bands to sing about such things, murder, whether it be domestic or street band genocide, is illegal in this country." All right.
That's the one. And because Roger Moore's stuck in traffic, he's then forced to chat to Shona as well, which I like because he's sort of like, "Oh, here we go. Say what you like, but you can't say it's not interesting. Please don't say that."
Did anybody else think with Shona McGough and her band all sat around Alan on the sofa, I feel like that was the deliberate recreation of the Sex Pistols on Bill Grundy, which is quite a famous kind of a cultural moment from the 70s.
They're the worst kind of punks, aren't they? Up yours, I'm going to be a bit naughty.
Say a rude word.
Or
as Alan says, "What the heck, rock and roll, let's all have a pair."
And also tries to prove that he's got some rock credentials. I've inhaled hashish, I've worn tall shoes, I had an afro haircut, I went on an all weekend binge at Prestatin to see Wings.
And something else, he saw Christa Berg, Mike Oldfield, Gene Michael Jarre and the Eagles.
Jean-Michel Jarre.
Jean-Michel Jarre.
Jean-Michel Jarre.
I don't know who that is.
Is it Jean-Michel Jarre?
Jam mogul. Jean-Michel Jarre.
Jed's lost it.
I didn't know who it was.
Jean-Michel Jarre.
That's very evident.
Well, that says Jean.
Jean. That's French.
Okay.
Vast swathes of women and French people tuning out of Monkey Tennis. I've got a weird note here. I can't remember what the context was for this, but I've just got, do you think Carol cheats on him while he's on air? He makes some sort of reference around this point that made me think.
I think she's just cheating on him in general.
Rather than watch the show, she's having sex with someone else.
Sports pimp.
Yeah, I can't blame her. So then he's forced to do the audience with Roger Moore, despite the fact Roger Moore's not turned up.
He's prepared a very elaborate set.
Yeah, and there's lots of him explaining what would have happened. The idea was Roger would have loved this, etc.
Even going so far as to have a nipple from The Man with the Golden Gun, which I thought was a bit odd.
I think the Roger Moore thing, what they've kind of drawn that in from Coogan himself, because he was a massive Bond fan, massive Roger Moore fan. So he writes in his autobiography, he was obsessed with the early Bond films. He had posters of Roger Moore up on his wall when he was a teenager. So that's kind of where Coogan and Partridge kind of merging.
But he's kind of doing a bit of a Jed Maxwell, isn't he? He's kind of, Roger Moore's going to walk into a set that's probably going to be incredibly overwhelming and
massive photo of him
putting.
Do you think Steve Coogan tried to get Roger Moore through Alan Partridge? Because if he's a massive fan and he's at the point where he's now got a BBC series of his own, do you think he did try and get Roger Moore and they would have written this slightly differently?
I don't think so.
No. I don't, because I think, you know, that's it's a good gag.
There's
about
no other big names.
The
it's
actual
just,
big
the
name
joke.
Guest that never arrives.
Fair enough. Describes Roger as having a lovely warm brown voice and then says, "This was going to be marvellous. I was going to start. Roger would have loved this." And then by turning around in the chair with a big cat on his lap.
Yeah.
Bond style.
When they finally get him on the phone, you get the, "Hello, Alan." Is that Steve Coogan?
I
doing
was
the
thinking
voice?
This.
I think it might be.
I think it is. I think.
Oh, confirmed in the commentary. It is Steve Coogan.
There we go.
It did sound good though.
It was good. Yeah.
And in an echo of Sue Cook writing to Steve Coogan to apologise for pulling out of events, as she's referenced in I Man and Partridge. In real life, Roger Moore was reportedly told off by a friend for not turning up to do the show. Oh, and there's a bit of an echo of Alan's shouting after Dan in I Man and Partridge when he's trying to get Roger back on the phone.
Roger.
And then the guests go in on him, don't they?
Yeah, they've lost patience.
To be fair, he did invite criticism.
Yep.
It's kind of like he does this repeatedly, doesn't he, through all Alan's output.
Yeah.
You know, thinks he can handle criticism until he hears it and then goes mental.
But I love it when he loses it. So he's lost all control. Up yours, kiss my arms.
He did also provide ham sandwiches to the band who are vegetarian.
And they compare his show to the Titanic. Just people forget there were over 1,000 miles of uneventful, very pleasant cruising for iceberg.
Good point.
I did have a note about the punk song, loosely called punk song, Monday Morning. It was written by Jonathan Whitehead, and he's also written music for The Day to Day, Brass Eye, Black Books, Green Wing, and Nathan Barley, among others. And he records under the name Trellis.
Any other salient points about episode one?
Just wanted to drop in a couple of things about the commentary. Quite interestingly, in every episode, the commentary is always the same. It's Iannucci, Rebecca Front, Marber, and Steve Brown. And so it's never Coogan. They always make a different excuse as to why he can't turn up. So, sorry, Steve can't be here. He's in Leeds or something like that. There's actually an extra scene on the DVD version, which I think we've, from Tom and I watching the DVD version, says that the episodes are actually a little bit longer.
Yeah, there's kind of a deleted scene that is in each DVD version, which makes it about 2 or 3 minutes.
There's been
longer.
A few different versions, hasn't there? Because the original broadcast version and the DVD version and the version you can find on Netflix now, I think, are all subtly different in minor ways.
Mm. Yeah, the DVD version is the longest.
So in this one, the extra scene is it's a short clip of Keith Hunt presenting "This Is Your Life." And David Schneider is dressed as the Big Book with a painted red face and a curly wig.
So, but Keith Hunt being on the show, they basically wackied it up and made it shit.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And just interestingly, a couple of notes on the production. Shows were recorded every fortnight and then back in on the Monday morning to write the next episode.
So it was all filmed in genuinely in BBC TV Centre in Shepherd's Bush as well.
And finally, Iannucci, this is an actual quote from Iannucci. He says in the commentary, "Oh, we got away with it a bit, didn't we?" Like, regarding the series as some of the scripts, and something we've alluded to in previous series about how the script writing process went. A lot of the scripts weren't finished before they started
always
filming.
Always down to the wire.
It's how they work.
I mean,
best.
I guess like we discussed with this, there's definitely an element of improvisation which probably allowed them to get away with it a bit more. Did everybody make a note of how he signs off with all the guests on this episode?
No.
Yeah, so obviously after he's lost his shit with all the guests, he basically signs off as on that bombshell, Scott's Lady Woman, The Hunt, and Mrs. Mouse.
quick note.
And Roger Moore's gone straight to Claridge's.
Where he's ordered room service.
An important detail that everyone needs to know, obviously. Yeah. Maybe a quick word about the audience as well. That obviously it was a group of people coming in knowing that they are watching a comedy show. And that's often, for a lot of people, I think that was the telltale sign that this wasn't real, is that there's obviously laughter at the bits that are funny and, you know, people aren't shocked how badly it's going.
And Coogan, again, from his autobiography, he pretty much remained in character as Alan during the recording process. So if there were, I think he would come out and introduce the show to the audience in character as Alan before they started recording.
Similar to what you did when you went to go see the show recording.
Yeah, I did the same at the filming of I, Man of Partridge. Okay. Yeah.
And he also writes how if there were ever technical difficulties, so like a kind of pause in recording, he would kind of talk to the audience, but fully in character as Alan the whole time.
And finally from me, this episode was rated 8 out of 10 on IMDb. How do we feel about that as a scoring, as a series opener?
I think it's a strong opener.
Yeah,
I think
it's a strong opener. Yeah.
Score. It sets out its stall very well.
Yeah.
Who actually takes the time to vote, to rate things on IMDb?
You don't have how many votes that's based on.
I can find that out.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, while you're doing that, we will start to gather our thoughts for Cards Against Atlantis.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
See? Most of you know how this works, but it's basically imagine the game Cards Against Humanity, but replaced with Alan quotes and sentences from the series.
No, Adam, it's nothing like Cards Against Humanity.
For copyright reasons, it's nothing like Cards Against Humanity. So let's see, have we got an answer on how many votes we've got on this episode?
I do indeed. It's a score of 8 out of 10 based on 84 votes.
So not that many. Not that many.
So I do wonder how much faith we should put in these IMDb ratings, but never mind.
I'd certainly score it an 8, possibly higher.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay, so the sentence you need to complete from this week's episode with your Cards Against Humanity cards is, this week, up my sleeve, I've got... So,
we've got a lot more to look through this time.
Yeah, that's true. We've given everybody more cards than they can possibly use. So I've passed the cards over to producer Jed, who is not allowed to speak, but he is going to judge his favourite.
He's allowed one word an episode.
Do you have a word for this episode, Jed?
No.
He's a smart one. Okay, so he's picked his winner. I'm going to go through the answers now. So, this week, up my sleeve, I've got murder, either domestic or street-bound genocide. This week, up my sleeve, I've got a big fat pig endlessly consuming and regurgitating what it eats without discrimination, without taste, without joy.
Yes!
Tom Dark's taking it this week, but let's read out the rest anyway. This week, up my sleeve, I've got a broken photocopier. And this week, up my sleeve, I've got Nick's favourite, a lady drummer. There we go.
Remember, there are none.
Yeah. So that's 1-0 for me this series.
1-0 for the Dark.
For you all this right. Series. More of that next week. I think that brings us to the end of this episode. A couple of quick things to tell you about. One that we're very excited about. We're going to be discussing Knowing Me, Knowing Yule live at the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square on Wednesday, the 22nd of November. Tickets are on sale now, and you can get the details at our Facebook page, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, or on twitter.com/thepartridgepod. Similarly, if you want to get in touch with comments, complaints, suggestions, and queries, it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, or on Twitter, we're @thepartridgepod. So, has anyone got anything else to add?
No, that's it.
Okay, on that bombshell, we'll leave you. Monkey Tennis will be back next week tackling episode 2 of Know Me, Knowing You. Until then, goodbye and aha!
Bye!
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. The artwork's by Dave McNamara, and the theme is an excerpt of the Black Beauty theme, Galloping Home, by Dennis King. To find out more about the records and podcasts made by Post-Pop, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey Tennis? You better believe it, babe. There's a new chat in town. Monkey Tennis?
Ice white shoes, ice white socks with navy blue double cadet top.
Aha! Monkey Tennis?
I've just been told that Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout.
Monkey Tennis?
Oh, what the heck? Rock and roll, it's Oliver Pear!
Monkey Tennis?
Yes, I am in a jacuzzi sipping spunt!
Alan.
And on that bombshell...
Monkey Tennis?
Aha.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.